You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
So next up in the woods, we've got Lady Unchained. She's a poet and author of the book Behind Bars, which speaks about punishment, prison and release. She's also the founder and creative director of Becoming Unchained CIC. Her mission is to prove that there's life after prison and to challenge the ex-offender label through creativity. And just as a note, this talk is being recorded. So can you please welcome to the woods, Lady Unchained.
Oh my God, hello. In the woods, we are in the woods. I was like, we're in the woods, should I come out with like some face paint like quickly so I can like, oh, warrior, you know, because that's what we are. Thank you so much for being here. I am going to perform some poetry for you. I'm going to do some talking. I might add a little Q&A at the end. So if you do have any questions you want to ask me, please do. So let's get into this. Also, if you have my book, make sure you buy it so I can come and sign it. I love to sign a book, but please bear with me with signing books because I'm the worst person. I just don't know how to write short messages because I want to get to know you. And I'm like, what do you do? And then it's all got to be included in a message. And then there's a line and then other people are waiting. And then you're like, oh God, I didn't know there was more people. But please bear with me if you do come to get your book signed. So I am Lady Unchained. And in 2009, That's better. In 2009, I was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison. I had never been to jail before. I had no convictions. I was not known to police. And I ended up in a nightclub fight where my older sister was attacked by 3 women who were, I guess, once her friends. So it was quite a bit of a shock. I did fight and I beat up 1 of 3 women and I didn't run away because, see, I thought it was self-defense. And so I was like, yeah, you know, it's self-defense. And they're like, no, GBH. And I'm like, what does that mean? Prison? And I ended up getting sentenced to Holloway. This mic is going really, keeps going down. Hello, sir. My friend, tech, it keeps going down. Just so you know, I might start talking in my African accent. There might be a Caribbean accent. Bear with me. I promise you I'm not taking a mic. I just have loads of characters. Yeah, about there. Perfect. Hello. Okay, cool. So yeah, bear with me. All right. So I'm going to basically take you on my poetic journey through my prison experience. Unfortunately for me, I got sent to a foreign national jail. So if you don't know, here in the UK, we have prisons that house people that were not born in the UK. So I was born in Uganda, Kampala. I was here from the age of about 3-4 years old. And when I got to prison and was told I have to go to a foreign national prison, I didn't understand. And I was threatened with deportation and even had a deportation date. I had to go on hunger strike. Because that was the only way that I saw the fight making sense. Because in prison, the more things you do and say to officers gets you in more trouble. So you're likely to end up doing a longer sentence or doing a sentence behind a door where it's like the block where you have nothing in your cell and it's just you, yourself and your crazy thoughts and stuff. So the first poem I'm going to perform for you is called Road to Victory. I won't read it. So if you do have the book, it might sound different because I'm performing it, not reading it. So don't worry, I'm not making it up as I go along. This is Road to Victory. And the reason I named this poem Road to Victory is because my prison sentence is my road to victory. You know, before jail, I had gone to school, had gone to college, had all these plans. I wanted to be an air hostess. I wanted to be a childminder. Even thought about being a police officer. I did say to the police when they arrested me, do you think that's still possible? Or are we going to like, they're like, let's just see what happens with your case. Of course, I went to jail, so no police officer for me. So Road to Victory is my first poem. I await sentencing. Scared and confused, but there's no praying. If God loved me, then I wouldn't be in this mess. That's all I'm saying. You're female with no previous. You'll get off. You've got this, so stop fretting. I hear my friend saying. Yet my solicitor's voice rings loud. You're looking at 3 to 5. There's no doubt. So just make sure you pack a bag each time you take that stand. And still, I just can't quite understand. But the judge soon made it clear. He screamed, 2.5, take her away. Take me where I scream, but there's no sound. The water falls from my eyes, kiss my cheeks. Farewell to me trying to look hard. The life I once knew was no more. Shattered dreams of future plans all just taken in a flash. Dark voices and angry voices in my head telling me this is the end. This is the end, so just end it. I left a piece of me on that stand. I felt her leave as I began to walk down them steps. I swear I never even looked back. See, I had to free her from this journey that we was about to take, because she was the me with the dreams and the ambition. She was the me who still had faith in the so-called justice system. She was the me who prayed. She was that 11-year-old girl who sang in Sunday choir. She was the me who wrote songs for Sunday school. She was the me who still cared about life. And all she was going to do was hold me back with her dreams of the life that we once had. Dreams I knew were just a thing of the past. Because where I was going, dreams are for the weak. Forget love, I need respect, because I ain't trying to be no one's chick. Media perception of life behind bars playing through my head. Like an episode of prison's most shocking moments. My beautiful future was no more. And so I began my life behind bars, broken and defeated with no feelings. Days are long, nights are longer, weekend bang-ups feel like a lifetime. 11-year-old me, where are you? I need you, where are you? She returned to me in the form of a prayer. Not long now, girl, just stay strong. Pray to God and I promise you a better day. Pain and tears may be felt at night, but rejoicing comes in the morning. Snap. It all of a sudden just made sense. See, this is the journey that was written for me to take, so I can teach my fellow brothers and sisters that it's not about anger, it's about peace. It's not about power, it's about grace. It's not about hatred, it's about love. These are the lessons I learned whilst in prison, so you don't have to go there to learn the same lesson. The choice is yours. I choose to be unchained. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, so of course, this person that you see today, I was not this person. You know, back in the days, text messaging was good, man. One-to-one, you know, you can do all of that stuff. Like, who needed to know numbers and write letters? Like, that was not something I was trying to do. But when I was in jail, that dark point of my life where I was suicidal and I wanted to end my life, and I literally just saw my life up to the age of 21 being irrelevant. It meant nothing, because for me, being labeled as a criminal was something I never ever saw happening in my life. I walked past prisons and never even noticed them, because for me, if you do a crime, you do the time, and that's how I was brought up. So, of course, I never had that experience. Luckily for me, I found a pen, I found faith, and I found myself. I found young people, women, girls who had been abused. I found women who loved the wrong man and ended up in a situation where they had to do time for loving the wrong man. And as I look here today, I can tell you that we've all made mistakes. We've all loved the wrong person, broken our hearts and whatnot. But should you be punished for falling in love with the wrong person? I met, and I said this on the other stage, an amazing woman, and I called her Big G. She was a white lady, petite, so amazing. And I remember saying to her, why are you here? Like, what did you do? She was like, well, I was trying to save the animals, you see, because I'm an animal rights protester and I'm a vegan. And I said, what is a vegan? 2009, vegans weren't famous back then. It weren't something cool. And she was in prison for that. And I just want to tell you that, like, you can go to jail for anything. We are all one step away from a prison sentence. It doesn't matter who we are, what sex we are, what color we are. But I will say that our color does determine how long our sentence is. I never realized that the criminal justice system was so racist enough to be in prison in Holloway to meet another amazing young white lady who said to me, you're in jail for that. I've done that about 5 times. And if I come out and someone attacks my sister, I'm going to do that again. And I tell you one thing, I ain't never been in jail for it. And in that moment, I had to question whether she realized that she was telling me that the system was racist, or she didn't actually realize that. I met women who had fallen in love with the wrong man. So I'm going to perform this poem just because it's not in the book. And I kind of feel like it's a poem that I love to perform. So I don't know how many people listen to rap. I mean, I don't listen to a lot of music. I listen to jazz and some soul music. The rap music is turning different these days, okay? The drill is different too. So I know this rap song, and I always forget this rapper's name, Fetty Wap. So there's Fetty Wap is a rapper, and he had this rap that was called Trap Queen. And of course, when I first heard it, it's a bit catchy. And I was getting into it. Then I listened, because I'm a poet and I like to take in information differently. And what he's saying in this rap track, that trap queens. My trap queen is the woman that cooks up all the drugs in the kitchen and she's going to do the time for the man. And I remember in that moment, I went, hold on a minute. I already met those women and their man is not around. So this selling this dream of a trap queen is a lie that you're giving younger girls to make them believe that if they do that for a man, he will love them. You're not telling them that they might have to do time for the man and the man will get another woman. So this is trap queen. He said he's in love with that Coco, so your relationship had to be on the low-low. But when it came to doing time for that Coco, so your relationship became public real quick. Because see, he needed you to take the rap. The funny thing is, he probably would have got less than you if he could just own up to his crimes, but you was too keen to please a man who would never please you back. So after you got the 5, he promised you he'll be there till the end, and those first 3 years just flew by, because see, he looked like he put in all the work to make sure you was nice and sweet in your new crib. The problem is now he's got a new Lolo on the out, and to her, you just look like the ex who didn't have a clue. But she'll soon get the cue to put in the extra work just like you, so she can be main chick to what used to be your main squeeze. Now you're living with this pain that's got you wanting to split your wrists, got you thinking about the life you had before you went in. The men who treated you right, but you just wanted to be part of that clique. But where was that clique when the judge clicked away your life? And where was that clique when your mum was shedding tears for your lies? See, it hurts me to write these words because it makes us women look like fools. Can the D really be that good? To have you doing time fantasizing about how good it was while your man's on the out reliving your fantasies with his new boo? See, too many girls want to be road girls, but they don't know what it means to be behind those bars, lose your identity to those walls, only remind of your name when you receive posts, told when to eat, sleep, and shit. Better be ready for that roll check. See, you don't want to be caught with one leg up and ass out on his turnaround and find Officer Smithy at your window, because see, he got front row tickets to your one-woman show. So carry on putting money in man before your life and see if they ever put you before their time. Just remember that life teaches you how to live it if you only live long enough to learn. And that's if you don't get caught up in a fate war, only fueled by your greed, because the only thing you'll be learning is how to rest in peace. Or better yet, just get used to those bars. And I ain't talking about the kind of bars that I just told. Thank you. All right, getting into the reading stuff. So this poem is called Bail. Again, I said I'm going to try and take you on that journey because I never knew what bail meant. Like, you know, what does bail mean? Like, you know, I didn't understand anything. But bail just doesn't mean you're on bail waiting to be sentenced. Your life is being shattered. If you've never been to prison before, you've never been to court before, and you're now on bail, it is a crazy thought. So this is bail. Being on bail feels like a slow death. Your body is left in limbo as you watch your life fall apart. The smile you had turn into a frown, love into hate and anger and regret. Bell tells you you're a failure. Plans crushed. Like taking a test and receiving an F. Your words and voice no longer have meaning. The you before bail no longer exists. No one wants to hear your truth. You sit in court and listen to others while they speak about the person you claim to be. Yet no one wants to hear you say a thing. Solicitors tell you to pack a bag because each hearing could be your last breath before you're put into the ground. The last time you hear your name out loud before you're given a number. That will become your new identity, the criminal, the convict. Convicted for a crime no one lets you explain. Your ghostly body just watches on as the judge slams the gavel to alert you to the start of your death sentence. No more limbo. This is your casket. This is your funeral. You can't see your family, but you can hear their cries, their screams. Their last sighs become your last sound. And only you can hear your screams. You are no longer in limbo. No longer in bail. You are dead. Thank you. Whew. That was a hard read, isn't it? Jesus Christ, I don't know how to do all this. Okay, so I'm going to talk to you a little bit about sweat boxes. So I was interviewed by an American podcast, Ear Hustle, and it was amazing because, like, we were talking about American prisons and UK prisons, and there's many differences. I have to say, as sad as I was to be in prison in the UK, I don't know if I would have made it in an American prison. And they said, well, how come you haven't written a poem about, you know, your sweat boxes? No, when actually, I don't know, but I am writing a book, so maybe I'll try. So this is Sweatbox. A quick pat down and you're pointed to the sweatbox. Climb up the stairs, turn right and take your seat to watch your life as it falls apart. Watch the normals live their lives as yours comes to an end. Loved ones holding hands, pubs pouring pints. You see everything through glass, yet no one sees you. No one even knows you're there. Would they even care? Would you have cared? Sitting in the sweatbox makes you question if you ever cared. Will you ever care again? Are you even worth caring for? The loved, the missed. Will anyone remember your name, or will you just die inside, be forgotten like those who made this journey before you? Driven through streets that remind you of your childhood, a time before sweatboxes. A time before prison sentences, when blue t-shirts and grey tracksuit bottoms were just clothes, not prison garms. When you walk past prison walls, not once ever thinking that one day you will live behind those same walls. Would it have even made a difference if you'd known? The sweatbox is your last chance to reflect alone, no matter how long or short your sentence is. All these thoughts are just the beginning of a battle you can never prepare for. A battle of deep inner conflict, starting with your identity, slowly stripped away as you reach your final destination into the land of fake eagles, fake smiles, hidden tears, the land of the nameless, the voiceless. The sweatbox is the last time to dream without bars. Live your last moments through strangers you see on the streets, the normals who will sleep in their own beds tonight. Wake up next to someone they love, not a random stranger, who will live the life you wish you still had. Because once you step off the sweatbox, there are no more wigs. There are no more home sweet home, no more friends, no more mum's chicken and rice, no more I love you. Just screams that start off scary until they become your new normal. Thank you. So in that poem, I talk about wigs being taken. When I was like younger, I used to have like wigs down to my bum. I had short wigs, I had red wigs, I had blonde wigs. I had all the types of wigs you can possibly buy. And like, to be fair, back in the days, it was a lot cheaper. I can't afford a wig now, to be honest with you. But when I got to Holloway and I was searched, strip searched, the officer touched my hair. My hair was a wig. It was clipped in. So I had cane rows underneath and I had like a little bit of my own hair so it looks natural, you know, give that goddess look. And she said, is your hair sewed in or glued in? And I actually really did question how she knew the different styles of weave being done. But I answered nonetheless, scared. I said, it is the wig and it's clipped in. And she said, you're going to have to take that off, love. And she took it off of my head. And she put it in a bag and she zipped it away and said, when you're leaving, you can get that back. I didn't get it back because, first of all, I didn't want the wig that had lived in prison with me. I was trying to be a new person. I found out very easily that in prison, being black, being African is a bit unfair and it's basically wrong. This is unwritten crime. I'm shipped away, off to the land of dreams, off to be free, free from all our problems, to the land where white people live. Our prayers have finally been answered, at least that's what the people we left behind think. The ones who would later only see me as the girl who spoke their language well for a British girl. The people who would never know how it feels to wait for a gyro that may never come. The lucky parents whose kids never had to pick them off the ground because they heard fireworks and thought they were bombs. The ones who believed London was the land of dreams. I'm sure they believed money grew on trees. A little shake here and a little shake there and poof, all your troubles can disappear. The ones too blind to see that this is where dreams come to be trapped. In prison cells, deportation centres, mental homes. In tower blocks, postcode wars, knife crime and gun crime. Here, we are the murderers and the victims, sacrificing each other for a piece of the dream. The dream of freedom promised to our ancestors is now the same one taking the lives and minds of our children. Because in this land, those dreams are only for the rich, rich and white. White is right and being born black, well, that's just an unwritten crime. After all, this is the land where white people live. Thank you. I had to read that poem, and I will be reading a lot more about that, just because for me, prison taught me that I was different. It taught me that I, you know, had to really appreciate being African. I think before prison, I knew I was African, but I never said it out loud because everyone else that knew me knew I was African. There was no need. So if you ask me where I was from, I would say I'm from South London. After prison, I say I'm African, if you ask me, and then you're, and I mean area. I'm like, oh, South London, South London. But I have to get it in there because being taken into prison and being taken into a detention center and being told that I had a deportation date back to Africa, I remember the officer who gave me this date was quite racist. And I said to him, are we going back there together, Dad? Because I think you must be my dad if you're the one taking me back to Africa, mate. And he said, I'm not your father. And I said to him, listen, you won't deport me because guess what? I am British and I have a British passport. And when I get out, I swear I'm going to make sure you suffer. And I'm going to tell this story over and over again because guess what? I want you to know that you done that. And I want other people to know that you done that. So I'm going to try and find a poem about him in here quickly. But I won't say his name. The lawyer said we're not allowed. So we've called him P.O. Nameless. He knows who he is, though. We know that. All right, cool. Dear P.O. Nameless, the name's Lady Unchained. I told you I'd come for you. All I did was ask for a transfer, and yes, I committed a crime, and I owned up to it. Wish I could say the same for you. Do you remember me? You requested we have a meeting, but that wasn't a meeting now, was it? More like an ambush with you and your hench female officer. I guess that was your threat to me. Do you remember me? You asked me my nationality. I replied British. I guess that was the wrong answer because you repeated the question. So I repeated my answer. See, I don't stutter. Must have been funny because you and your fellow officer had a little laugh while I just sat there questioning your sanity. Yeah, I'm the one who's meant to be the criminal. Come on. You must remember me now. Or was there too many of us that you lost count? You took away all my rights and said the only thing you could do for me was send me back to where I come from. Uganda, Kampala. You said it so naturally like you was my long-lost father. Well, hello, long-lost father. Do you remember me now? I told you, see, you ain't sending me nowhere unless it's London, Manchester, Liverpool or Birmingham. Because, you know, I got family I can stay with. You wasn't satisfied, though, so you gave me a date. 9th of August was set to be my deportation day, 3 days before my birthday. And I can't lie, I began to feel the pain. And I wanted you to feel it, too. But I know how this ends. I kick you where it hurts and I end up feeling more pain. Still don't remember me? I stood up to leave. See, I knew this wasn't going nowhere. But your guard dog was on cue. She stood over me to show me who's boss. Have you ever laughed with fear? I couldn't believe this was real. I was in a foreign national prison with officers who truly had it out for me. I only saw this kind of stuff on TV. Still don't remember me? Dear P.O. Nameless, I don't know what I've done to you that's got you going on this personal vendetta. But when I get out, I'm going to find you. And I'm going to light up the darkness with my words. Still don't remember me? You will. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to perform Dear Mum. And I'm going to try not to read it. So this poem is quite emotional for me. My mum is my strongest ally, like, and being away from her for so long while I was in prison, I felt like I'd let her down. I felt like I had other family members talking about her, and I literally felt like I was gonna swear, but let me try and limit my swearing because it's just, it flies very quickly. So what I did is, while I was in jail, we wrote back-to-back letters, and I've actually tried to perform this poem in front of my mum, and then I had to told her to turn around because I couldn't look her in the face. It's based off of those letters that I wrote when I was in the Foreign National Jail. So this is, dear mum, if I stutter, I will start again. Please bear with me. Dear mum, I'm sorry. I know I promised to be good, and I swear I've been trying to hold it down, but see, this place just ain't for me. These officers are more racist than the guy who used to live down the road. The white British inmates are complaining that they ain't got enough white products on the canteen. I personally wouldn't care if they put jell-o on the menu. I just want to get out of this hellhole that they tried to disguise as a centre. Did you notice I said white British? I just realised I was different. See, this place is making me question every single part of my identity. Mum, I swear they're trying to kill me. Remember on the weekend, remember I told you on the weekends we might as well starve. See, we get breakfast in the morning. Well, that's what they call it. It's one boiled egg, five chips you dropped on and you're pissed. And we can't even take food back to our room. Sorry, I mean cell. I'm still trying to get used to the word cell. Feel like I'm fighting to make it through, Mum, but freedom of speech just don't apply here. I made a comment about the food and how the portions can be better. You never believe what the officer replied when he heard. He said, don't act like when you're not out, you get more food than this. As if to imply that I must not eat anywhere else but here. I bust a switch, Mum, I'm sorry. But how could he just take the piss? Does my life not mean a thing? Is my skin colour too dark for them to have respect for me? Don't they see that I too have a beating heart and two eyes that I used to see just how much hatred they have for me? Hopefully my transfer goes through. Then I can return back to normality. Pray for me, Mum, because these people are moving mad. And I don't want to get caught up in their web of lies and confusion. You know me, I don't fight, that's the other me. I don't know how she works, I can't control her. But it's like they can see her anger through my eyes because I can feel her heat pumping through my chest. Mum, I'm not sure how long I can hold her in. I just pray this transfer comes quick. Thank you. Oh my God, I got through it. Wow. Did you capture that? I need to send it to my mum. Okay, so of course, like, it's really funny because, like, all the work I do, everyone thinks, like, at first when I met National Prison Radio, I think they didn't know how to take me because they were like, this girl just laughs at everything. Everything's funny. But we all know if you don't laugh, you end up crying and maybe just, like, locking your windows and curtains and just being in depression. So I laugh through a lot of things. But the reality is that I see my prison sentence as a journey that was meant to happen. I'm a strong believer of Christ, and I know that he had his own reasons for sending me there. While I was in prison, there's many things that happened that I always questioned. You know, in a foreign national jail, education was not a key. It wasn't advised as much as it is in British prisons. So I asked to go to education and they said, no, you won't get on that. And I said, well, why? I've still got a long sentence. They went, no, you've got to go to the factory. I said, the factory? What's funny is this. I went through these factories and we all fly. Everyone likes to go on a good holiday, hey? Guess what happens? Prisoners make these little parts that actually keep the plane up, you know? Prisoners, by the way, they make those parts that help you go on holiday. Now, I'm surprised by that. I literally said to the officer, like, you're making criminals make things that go up in the sky with people. They're like, yeah, we're watching them. Now, this is just labor, free labor, of course, because the prisoners don't have a choice but to be there. I got sent to a factory where I was making clothes. Yes, I became a fashion designer. Only making prison garments, though, nothing fancy. And during this time, I remember thinking, how could I send a message to myself or somebody else? And this is the letter B. I was meant to go to prison. Not because I deserved it, not because I was a bad person, but because God said so. Foreign national prisoners don't need an education. You go there to the end of your vacation. So forget about any connections you made through your life in the UK. Forget about future learning. You're on your flight away from the land. Foreign national prisoners don't need an education. Going there is the end of your vacation. So forget about any connections you made through your life in the UK. Forget about future learning. You're on your flight away from landing in a place that you were taught to hate. You'll learn how to sew tracksuit bottoms and jackets that will be shipped into all the British prisons. All the while wishing that you were a piece of that clothing, free to travel back to where you belong. So you sew the letter B inside the leg of a tracksuit, hoping someone will question how it got there. What does it stand for? Who marked this letter B in their tracksuit bonds? But no one ever writes, no one ever asks. That letter B was my message in a bottle from a place I thought I would never escape, until one day I was whisked away after a hunger strike, suicidal thoughts, everybody watching me, but nobody watching the officers. I was shipped away like those pieces of clothing that I wish I could one day become, back with the British inmates, with British rights, allowed to have an education. See, British inmates need an education. Going to prison is their chance to reflect and deal with any rejection that they may have faced on the outside world, forced to rebuild any connections they may have lost. Yet all the while, no one questioning whether these connections are positive or negative. In Downview, I found the tracksuit bottoms with that letter B in them. See, enhanced inmates get to do their own laundry. That sounds very small, but it's a big deal. So I decided to keep the pair of tracksuit bottoms, turn them inside out, and there it was, the letter B, sewed into one leg. I was my own message in a bottle. This was my story to tell, but it would be 12 years before I could tell it, because getting out of prison would be when the real sentence start. I was meant to go to prison, not because I deserved it, not because I was a bad person, but because God said so. Thank you. So it's so funny because like part of me wants to really cry and get emotional, but I'm also very grateful that I am standing here, especially because I was so happy to not be here when I got to jail. I felt that death was a easier option than living. And I guess that's because there's so much pain that lives inside prison, and those walls are so high. And when you're not inside it, you never know what really happens. I met women who were pregnant in prison. I watched as women were saying goodbye to their children on a visit, crying after the family left. In prison, you don't show emotion. You don't want to cry. And when your family comes, you don't want to show them how much in pain you really are. So you put on a face, you put on makeup, and you smile through every single visit, until those loved ones are gone. And then you see every woman turn to each other and cry, because that might be the last visit they're gonna have in a very long time. I got asked to speak on ITV News, and it was all about talking about especially black prisoners and their needs not being met, how they're treated, being called monkeys, you know, being told that, you know, they're just being aggressive. I'm standing here right now with my hands like this, but honest to God, like when I'm talking to my friends, I'm all like this, like, and I'm doing all of that. So, you know, if that happens, I'm not being aggressive. I'm very animated. And I kind of like, I'm a storyteller. So it's easy for me to do that. However, in prison or in society, if a black woman or man is seen raising their hands and doing all of this, that automatically assume that something's going to happen. So this is my land. I feel like my mind has been hijacked, taken away by dark thoughts. Inside, I'm begging to be heard, begging to be seen. But all they see is my crime. my dark skin, my change of tone, fists rolled and tears running down my cheeks, but black tears don't count, don't hurt, don't feel. I'm fighting a battle that can't be won in this body that they told me was my own. Lower your tone, crack a smile, act like you're not angry they nearly deported you to a land you've only just learned to call home, learned to embrace. So now I'm angry. You made me hate my roots, my culture, my care for all things African turned into fear, disgrace, disgust. So now I'm pro-black. It's the only way I can be, trying to make up for lost time when I denied my own, just to fit into a land that will never see me as its equal. I'm that one that made it out, slipped through their fishing net, their net that only catches black people and enslaves them in their way of life, then throws them back to the sea when they believe they're no longer good to them. It must hurt you that I landed on my feet, but I had to drown before I could resurface. I had to kill the slave you installed in me, the British girl you sold a dream to, and understand that I was Ugandan before I was British, but I'm also South London through and through. And girls from South London don't go down without a fight. So I dedicate this fight to you, dear justice system. Please stop failing my people. Thank you. Oh, okay. All right, this is crazy. I've never read so many poems back to back. Upgrade. Okay, so I'll do something a little bit lighter. I mean, I say that, but I feel like everything in his book is quite emotional, you know. I don't think I've ever actually like stood and read my whole book because part of me is like, it is very triggering. And I know I was in prison in 2009, but it is still triggering. I go into prisons and I do workshops and help people learn to write poetry because it's something that I picked up in prison and I want people to learn how to do it so they can maybe one day stand up here and perform and tell you that they are unchained. So I'm going to do this small one. Because, yeah, let's just do this small one. This is Inner Child. Sometimes I think I'm going mad. Like this body I live in is borrowed, made up of someone else's anger and pain and not enough joy. The tone I speak in does not belong to me. She sounds too broken and that just isn't me. Sometimes I see a glimpse of her in my reflection, but her scars cut too deep, leaving my heart with a burning sensation. It's like it's bleeding and there's nothing to soak up its blood. How does she live with all these feelings hack, hack, hackling away at her soul? Red eyes with no weed, clothes without sleep. I'm hungry, but she won't eat. I try to force feed her with love until she feels that deep down her inner child still feels and sees her. Dear diary, please show her this note. Tell her together we can be whole again. My love will help us heal our scars from within. Dear diary, please tell her to let love in. Thank you. All right, okay. So it's interesting because when you go to jail, you have like a sentence and then part of that sentence, they tell you like at a certain point in your sentence, if you are good, you get to go on weekend release and vottles. So weekend release, like you actually get to leave the prison for the weekend and then come back to prison. It was actually quite interesting when my mum had to explain it to like her African family back home that she's only here for the weekend. And they're like, she's free. They're like, no, no, no. She's here for the weekend. She has to go back to prison. They're like, no, 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 no. But why does she have to go back? She's free. They let her out now. She doesn't need to go back in there. They're like, no, if she doesn't go back, she's wanted. Okay. And we had to explain this to all of them. And everybody just said, you know what? Just don't explain the prison system to us because we don't understand what you're talking about. It doesn't make no sense. How can they let her out? And then she has to go back and hand herself in. And it was the most scariest thing because like a lot of people don't come back because they're like, well, actually, I'm not going back there. Catch me if you can. And other people like me are like, please, I just want to go back so that I can make sure that I actually get out on the day that I'm meant to get out. So I was waiting for a tag. And obviously in prison, if you're in a certain predicament or you fail drug tests, you won't get all of those things. But I luckily got my release date and it was this poem. 27th of December, 2009. Mum, I'm coming home. My scream from beyond the prison walls reach every mother waiting at the gate to see their daughter's face and feel that long-awaited embrace. I remember it like it was yesterday. 27th of December 2009. Two. After serving 11 months inside, I was finally being released from prison, free from those four walls that saw me break down and weep from all the weakness, brought on by all the shame and sadness. Could this really be the end of my pain? Three. Hidden tags, sprint to New Cross Station, jump in African uncle's cab, trying to explain him to him why I need him to mate like Roadrunner with that great escape from Wile E. Coyote. Beep, beep. No time to explain. The clock strikes 7 p.m. But I can still hear the chains, the keys and slamming of doors. Prison life is calling. A0423 AD. You never forget your prison number. It always stays with you. Why can I hear the officers bringing me back? Welcoming me back like I watched them welcome back women like me. Now I understand why these women ended up back inside with me. Every red light feels like an extra month inside, but just that one day there would be the death of me. Will they be waiting for me outside my door to take my flesh back to hell? 7:15 and we pull up to my block. My heart is racing. I can hear the monitor ring. Phone ringing when I buzz myself in. Hello, hello, I'm sorry, I'm here, like I never left. Never run from those four walls, a prison away from prison. No more going outside. Outside is too dangerous. Outside means waiting for another release date. Thank you. Thank you so much. I think it's always interesting because, you know, a lot of people hear, oh, well, they enjoy prison and they had fun and they get free meals a day and they, you know, it's a good place and you meet people. But the saddest part of my prison sentence was meeting other women and realizing that these women felt a lot safer in prison than they did in our community. When I was on tag, all I wanted to do was just avoid going back to prison. So after that one near kind of like threat, I actually did not go out and I stayed in my house. And I remember probation and the phone ringing and they're like, you know, you need to leave the house. I'm like, why? It's safer this way. It's safer for me to be here because you can't take me from my house if I haven't left my house. And they said, no, you have to go outside because see, right now we don't know, you've answered the phone, but we don't know where you are because we can't monitor you. So they had to come back to the property, take off the tag off my leg and put on a new one and make me walk around the house again. And then I started having to go outside. So, you know, when they were saying, where do you go? I said, well, I take the bins out. They're like, that's it? I'm like, well, I don't have a job yet because I'm a criminal. So, you know, and they're like, well, you just need to go outside. And it's interesting because a lot of people would rather stay in jail and wait for their actual release date than to get tagged and be locked in a house, because for them, it's a little bit like too tempting, if that makes sense. For me, having a tag, being around my family was one thing that I needed to do. I needed to be home and I needed to see my house, and all the visions that I had in prison were my beautiful house, my flat, my many rooms, not that one room. And I think that was the heartbreaking part of it, because in prison, you dream about your life so much, the one that you had. You know, a lot of people go to prison, they don't have a home. They don't have family. They don't have any support. I had my whole family. I had my own flat. I had an education. And for me, all of that had been taken away. So all I was hungry for was that, my life back. So after I was finally released, I went home and felt a little bit like this. First night home, I've waited for this day. I've cried hoping for this day. I've dreamt of this day. But when my mum handed me the keys, it felt so strange to me. See, where I come from, only the screws have keys. They use them to torture us mentally. They remind us of our non-existing power, our mistake, our shame. Daughter, go on, open the door. But see, these keys have no power to me. They don't fit in my hands like they used to. I enter my home like a stranger, taking in my surroundings. It all looks the same. TV on the wall, L-shaped sofa, in the same place, just like I dreamt it in jail. I should be happy, more excited, but I'm nervous, and I don't know why. I hide it well behind my smile. Prison taught me that much. So they all leave me, convinced that I'm okay by my smile, something. Sometimes I even deceive myself. And has me believing that I'm okay. But these scars are deep, invisible to the naked eye. In prison, my mind was free. Yet here, only my body feels free. But my mind still feels locked up in HMP. Maybe sleeping in my bed will set me free. Ease the pain of the bricks they call the pillow. The screams of women who shouldn't be there. The banging of doors, the shutting up of lives. I'm awakened by the sound of keys, footsteps. I need to get up, get dressed before the officer comes and sees me naked again and then blames me for not being dressed and ready in time. And then I realize I am already home. This is my bed. No one is coming to unlock me. I have the keys, but still I have no power. I guess that's what prison took from me. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to read this poem and then I think...
What's the time like?
Okay. All right. So this is the like final poem in the book. Trust me, there's more poems I can't skim through. Don't think there's just... I did actually write a whole book. You know, it is mine. Actually, when I wrote this book and the publisher sent me the draft, and I kind of sat there and I literally was like, huh? Who wrote all of this? And they're like, you wrote it. And I'm like, are you sure? Like, did you check it? Like, I haven't stolen anyone's words or nothing. And she was like, no, we've got lawyers, you know, we check everything. And, you know, it was interesting because some of these poems I've read to women I met in prison and read them on TV or on the radio and stuff. And I have friends who in the Foreign National Prison decided they didn't want to fight that battle no more. So with their British passport, went back to Africa or wherever it is that they were born because they said, nope, this ain't going to work for me. And so it just meant that like a lot of people that I speak to now kind of sometimes hear my interviews and they message me and say, thank you, which is amazing because sometimes I start to believe that I've been so traumatized that I'm starting to re-traumatize myself and imagining even deeper and darker things. And the reality of it is it all happened and it is still happening to women right now, black, brown, white, animal rights protesters. Like you're going to get locked up too because my friend Big G will tell you that. So I go into prison and I teach people to write poetry, but also I want them to learn how to tell their story, because if we can learn how to navigate that story and share it, then hopefully we can save lives. And not only save lives, we can avoid and stop young people from going to prison. Prison is no place for anybody, and I'll tell you that right now. Every single time I meet a young person or a woman or like a man, and I say I'm gonna do writing, I never tell him it's therapeutic. I do it because it's therapeutic, because they'll be like, oh God, Jesus Christ. No, we don't need that. We don't need that. So I have to tell them in a nice way. Like, we're just going to write some bars, you know, a little bit of bars, like sharing rap, poetry, you know, ease them into it. And a lot of the times people say to me, I'm not a writer. I don't write. I've never written a piece to write in to save my life. I couldn't do it even if you paid me. And by the end of those sessions, we've got notebooks of writing. This poem is called I Come From. And the only reason it's at the end of the book is because it was the last poem I wrote, and I thought the book was finished, and I got interviewed, and when I got interviewed, I felt so bad about the interview because it made me feel like I was still this 21-year-old girl who went to jail, when actually, in fact, I am Lady Unchained. And so I used the same activity that I use for the young people in prison, and this is what came up of it. I come from a place where you'll either ride or die or someone's victim, where evil lies behind the brightness of smiles, where we hide behind a screw face so we don't show fear, where nightmares are disguised as dreams and dreams are a privilege. I come from a place where fighting is taught from a young age, a place where being young doesn't last long, so we're forced to become men and women before we fully understand the responsibilities that follow. I come from a place where love isn't love unless it's followed by pain, where black eyes and emotional abuse are how someone shows you they love you, where little girls are taught that a boy hitting them means he likes them. I come from a place where up is down and the sky only looks blue for those who have never seen darkness. A place where darkness follows me every step of the way, and giving in to darkness sometimes seems like the only way. But I also come from a place where I taught myself to love myself through darkness, to love every scar I see in my reflection that paints a map to the woman you see today. I come from a place where chains are meant to be broken. I come from fire. I come from the Unchained Tribe. Thank you so much. So obviously I'm gonna allow you to ask me some questions if you want. I think that for me, if you do have the book, like read it, go through it, find a poem that like resonates with you and share it with somebody that might want or need that story, because a lot of the times people's stories are not being told. And I need you to understand that prisons are still standing, and there has been an estimate that there will be 17,000 more people in prison by 2026. So how many of us are here? About 10,000, you know, like that's kind of all of us here. If we mess up, we will go to jail. And that is all of us. You might get like a sentence because you're white, or you might get like a sentence because you're rich. Or actually, if you're rich, you ain't even going to jail. Like they're not going nowhere. They're just the winners. But you will go to jail because they are creating spaces for us to be there. And there are babies being born in prison. Those same babies grow up to be the boys that end up in prison. I met a young man who said to me, I just want to do better. I don't think I had a chance. I was born in prison and now I am in prison. That young man is doing amazing work right now, but the simple fact that he had to accept that for himself, that wasn't his choice that he was born in prison. Somebody could have prevented that. So I just urge you to like read into the news, like in regards to their stories of fake news, question it. Question it, ask why that story's been written like that, and maybe just say, look, you know what, have you heard of Lady Unchained? She's doing a lot of stuff, actually. Do you know her? You know, because a lot of times people with lived experience don't get promoted enough, and so it means that I or all the other lived experience people are just hoping and shouting about prison for such a long time until someone finally hears us. So maybe just listen. Thank you. Has anybody got any questions? Please have questions. Don't have questions about deep stuff, though, guys. Hello. So what do I think would be a best way to deal with that, a better way of dealing with that, the GBH charge? I think for me, I went to probation, and probation, I spoke to them. I think that was probably the first time I spoke to a probation officer, like not even a probation officer, like opened up about things that had happened to me as a young person. Growing up, you don't always get the time to talk. And this is why it's always interesting when I'm in prison and I talk to young people and I get them to put pen to paper. And all of a sudden, they're like, oh, my God, I've never been allowed to talk about this. So I think the way I would see it is that women's centres, there's women's centres. My probation officer, when he met me, said to the judge, don't send her to jail. Like, she could have committed crimes a very long time ago, but she hasn't. She's gone 21 years. She's fine. Just get her some anger management. Get her some, you know, some support. And let's deal with her in the community. The judge didn't. I went to prison. And that meant having to come back with housing arrears. I never knew. You know, I came out of prison and went to housing. They're like, oh, you got rent arrears? I said, what's arrears? I had no idea what arrears were. Prison then took that moment for me to be that person that had no debts. Because before that, I had no debts. If anything, everybody owed me money. I was that person. You know, so there is women's centres where women can go and see like-minded people. Probation, go into probation as a woman in a probation officer that is mainly run by men. Like, there is men everywhere. And if you're a woman who has been through a domestic violent relationship, or you're already insecure and you're then placed in this position of probation with all these other men, that's like, maybe I'm not saying all men are terrible, I'm not gonna, you know, but there are men out there that will target you because you've been to prison. So now all of a sudden you're in probation to get help, but now you've connected with a man who also sees you as a weak point, and now you're being groomed into something else. I would say women's centres are just the most amazing places for women to go to instead of sending them to jail. Women are taken away from their children. There's only a few mother and baby units. If you have two kids and are pregnant, you have to choose whether you'll go to a mother and baby unit to give birth to your child so that you can keep your child in that mother and baby unit while losing custody of the other two. if you sent them to a women's center, they can give birth in a hospital and still have the connection with their children. And there's creches where your kids can come, and it's a safe place. So I would say that, women's centers. And also, I only found out about women's centers 10 years after my sentence. So,
hi.
Have I ever thought of becoming a magistrate? I mean, this is looking like a good setup here right now. do you know what? It's interesting that, because I kind of feel like I have never thought of it. I have thought we need to do more so that like judges can have more of an understanding of like everyone that they're dealing with. But yeah, I mean, it's already hard enough for me that I might one day have keys to walk into a prison. And that scares me a lot. So I don't know if I could be a judge, because I think, let me give you an example. I got called in to do jury service, and I didn't think I was allowed to do that. And I called them up, and I told them about my convictions. They said, oh, no, we know about them. And I said, oh, but do you know where I work? And they went, where do you work? And I said, do you know what I do? And I said, they said, no. Because I go into prisons and work with people in prison, and I make sure that they are heard and seen. And so I'm not really quick to send anybody to prison until you give me the right proof that that person should go to jail. And she went, okay, I'll call you back. Got a letter in the post saying, nope, don't need her. Don't need that one. She ain't going to send anyone to jail. So I don't know if they'll allow me to be a magistrate. We can try it, though. We can try it. Thank you. All right. No questions? All right, my peoples. Thank you so much for having me. I've been Lady Unchained at the Green Belt Festival 2024. Thank you so much for having me. And if you've got my book, come over there. I'm going to sign them all. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.